Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Thank you. Hello, hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the Minute Waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and around the world, but also to welcome to the program this week four talented, humorous, clever individuals who are going to display their verbal ingenuity, their cleverness with words, with language and humour as they try and speak on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition or deviation. And those four bright individuals are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and seated on my left, Sheena Hancock and David Mitchell. Would you please welcome all four of them? And seated beside me is Sarah Sharp, who's going to help me keep the score, run the stopwatch, and blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in the heart of Broadcasting House. And we have a really hearty audience here. So we're going to begin the show this week with Sheila Hancock. Sheila, the subject we've got here is agony aunts. Oh. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I've always been very suspicious of this idea of agony aunts. I actually think it's an office full of people, not one person, because they couldn't possibly deal with all those different subjects. I also enjoy Pamela Stevenson's agony
David, you challenge.
Well, I think it's slipped into a language I don't speak.
Yeah. It's called hesitation.
David, you have a correct challenge, and the subject is agony aunts, and you have 42 seconds starting now.
I don't have any aunts, as my parents are both only children, so I have never known the...
Paul challenge.
Both your parents are children.
Only children.
They're only children.
No, they're only...
But they never grew up. It seems very harsh judgment. They may not have had your education, but there's no need to talk to them like that.
It's a lovely thought, Paul, but he was conveying that they were only... What did you say?
If somebody
doesn't have any brothers or sisters, they're called only children.
Yes.
Could be called orphans.
Yes.
They could be called orphans if they were also orphans. Or if their name was Orphans. Morning, Orphans. Morning. Alphonse and Orphans. Two brothers.
So, Paul, we did enjoy your interruption, so we give you a bonus point for that one. But, David, you were interrupted, so you get a point for that.
Thank you.
And you take over the subject of agony aunts, and there are 36 seconds starting now.
No aunts ever came to my Christmases and caused agony by being snarky about the way...
Paul challenge.
Snarky.
Yes, snarky.
You say yes, snarky.
No, I just said snarky.
Oh,
yes.
Deviation.
It's a lovely word. No, I think you can create words.
I mean, okay.
Edward Lear was always creating lovely new words.
Yes.
And so did Lewis Carroll.
Yes.
And I think David Mitchell's entitled to do the same thing.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Of the snarky.
Mm. Yeah, hunting of snarky.
And,
we're allowed to make up words now. That's good news, isn't it? Yeah. That's going to save a lot of trouble later on, I'll tell you that. I'm writing a few
You've
down
heard
now.
Of Lewis Carroll. You've heard of the hunting of the snark?
I've heard of it. I live it. It's a daily struggle as far as I'm concerned.
So,
just getting down to the shops.
If Lewis Carroll can tell us about the hunting of the snark,
yeah.
Then David can take that word and call it snarky.
Okay, fair enough.
And so you have an incorrect challenge again, David, and you have 30 seconds to continue with agony aunts starting now.
The other thing that agony aunts means is those people who write for newspapers and try and give advice. I have sent letters many times to these people asking about how to put up shelves or...
Paul Chalmers.
We had people before.
Yes, you did.
Such a useful word.
I know, yes. You did say it before.
Should have said snarks or something.
Paul, a correct challenge, 19 seconds, agony aunts, starting now.
There were no agony aunts in Snarky and Hutch, but what a television show that was. Two cops battling their way through American cities. They needed agony aunts to advise them. Yes, they did. Like Claire Rayner, she was the chief one. She'd come onto the set and she'd say, listen, if you're going to get somebody's fingerprints in a pool alley, what you've got to do is put them up against the wall, shove your hand right up between their arms...
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point, and on this occasion it was Paul Merton who had 3 points at the end of the round, and David Mitchell also has 3 points. They're both equal in the lead. Clement Freud and Sheila Hancock have yet to speak, and Clement, we'd like you to begin the next round. And the subject is after-dinner speaking, 60 seconds, starting now.
Let me begin by saying that I'm still available. And very recently, like last Tuesday, I made an afternoon speech. I will repeat it now. Emperor, I said, Your Majesty, Royal Highnesses, Dukes, Earls, Marquesses.
David, you've challenged.
A slight hesitation between various dignitaries. Maybe just to accord them a sufficient level of respect.
I get lousy audiences like that at my after-dinner speeches every now and again.
Well, and that may be the pace at which you take your after-dinner speeches, but you were definitely pausing according to the rules of Just a Minute, Dammit.
Really?
Yes. So, David, you have a correct challenge.
Thank you.
And you have... And you have after-dinner speaking, 44 seconds, starting now.
After-dinner speaking is difficult because of the amount of wine I have drunk. But nevertheless, I do my best and try not to be sick on the tablecloth or say offensive things to ladies present. So I suppose the greatest skill in after-dinner speaking, if you do it professionally, like Clement or Giles Brandreth or the kind of...
Clement, challenge.
Two oars.
There are too many oars there. So 25 seconds available for you after a correct challenge, Clement. After dinner speaking, starting now.
Not forgetting the bride's mother. That's always...
Another... Sheila Hancock?
Was that a hesitation?
That was a hesitation, yes.
Yeah.
He waited for the laugh. It didn't come.
I didn't wait.
And so it was a hesitation. Sheila, you have a correct challenge. After dinner speaking, 21 seconds, starting now.
I loathe listening to after dinner speeches. They're usually rude or boring, and I feel sick when I have to make one myself, although I did once get an award as the best after dinner speaker of the year. Mind you, that award is...
Paul, challenge.
Position of award.
Yes.
Sadly, much deserved, I'm sure.
Yes. Paul, you've got the subject. You have 6 seconds available. After dinner speaking, starting now.
The secret of a good after dinner speech is to look your audience firmly in the eye and start fighting.
Right. Well, Paul Merton was again speaking as a whistle went, gained that extra point. He's just ahead of David Mitchell. Then come Clement Freud and Sheila Hancock in that order. David, we'd like you to start the next round. It's what I admire about the Romans.
Oh,
I don't know whether it's your subject or your era, but tell us something about it in this game, starting now.
What I admire about the Romans is how they managed to live in that very old city where other Romans lived many years earlier, and they try and make it easy for themselves by digging a tube network. But as soon as they got 2 railway lines underground done, international authorities, say from the United Nations, said, "You must stop doing that. You're drilling through the foundations of many temples and destroying thousands of ancient and precious pots. We can't have you continuing to do that."
Sheila, challenge.
Did he repeat continuing?
No. So an incorrect challenge.
Yeah, you got an extra
And David,
point.
You've still got the Romans, or what I admire about the Romans. 34 seconds, starting now.
And the Council of Rome reply, "Don't you understand? We're trying to get to work. We need to live in this place."
Clement, challenge.
Repetition of we.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
You can see the response that got, Clement.
Yeah.
27 seconds with you, Clement. What I admire about the Romans starting now.
Polanski and Abramovich are the two Romans whom I know reasonably. And what Roman does so extremely nicely is direct films, though not in America, where he has been summoned and convicted of a crime which disallows him from continuing to work in California and New York, which are mainly the two.
So Clement Freud was then speaker of the whistle and gained that extra point. He's now moved into third place, 2 points behind David Mitchell and Paul Merton, who are in the lead. Equal, Sheila's trailing a little. Paul, it's your turn to begin, and the subject we've got now is digital radio. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Well, in many ways, it's a marvellous invention, digital radio. I particularly enjoy listening to the bees...
David, you challenge.
He lost the will to live, I think.
So, David, you have a correct challenge. digital radio, 53 seconds, starting now.
Digital radio is something that we're supposed to be more interested in than in fact we are, because all it does is deliver the same thing we're used to, radio content, but a different way. And I don't see why that's so very fascinating. When the Postal Service moved over from horse and cart to vehicles with internal combustion engines, I don't think people were expected to be fascinated by the changeover, but because it helps to sustain companies like Currys and Dixon's by making us replace perfectly usable radio sets in our houses, we're supposed to be interested and keen to involve ourselves. Thank you so much. Now, I thank the audience for their sympathy, but I was dying there.
You were going magnificently, but you were going at such a pace, you've got no breath left. Yeah. And so, Paul, you challenged.
There was a bit of a hesitation there, I thought.
No, I don't think so. No? I mean, he was really trying to struggle to get the words out.
It was the thoughts I was struggling to get out, I think, the words, but...
David, 20 seconds for you to continue on digital radio, starting now.
I don't see why tuning in through a different form of technology is important as far as a change in the system by which we hear voices that are coming from a long way away. The important breakthrough...
Well, there was a hesitation there.
Yeah, it was, because he didn't know where he was going.
There
he
really was, yeah.
We interpret that as hesitation. So, Paul, you got him with 9 seconds ago on digital radio, starting now.
Some music doesn't sound too good on digital radio. It's something to do with how they can...
Clement Charnas.
He said summon something, that's and I buzzed before he got the thing out.
I didn't know it was going to be that sort of party.
So, an incorrect challenge, Paul. You've still got digital radio and 5 seconds to go, starting now.
Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, heard on digital radio.
So, Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's now taking the lead, one ahead of David Mitchell and Sheila Hancock. It's your turn to begin. The subject is my ego. Can you tell us something about that in this game, starting now?
I had a mouse called Ego because I saw him in the lounge and I said, there he goes, to my friend who shared the flat with me, and therefore I called him my ego. He was grey and he had whiskers and little brown eyes and he went ee! Like that. And I got quite fond of him, really, and fed him with cheese and butter and chocolate because mice like chocolate very much.
Oh, yes. Clement, you challenged.
Yes.
Chocolate.
Yes. Too much chocolate you gave him. Clement, you've gone in on my ego, and there are 32 seconds starting now.
The word ego is often pronounced ego, which I actually prefer. The ego and the id, a book for which I get royalties, written by my brother, is an extremely interesting volume which I would urge everyone to purchase.
Sheila Hancock, challenge.
It's not extremely interesting. It's one of the most boring books I've ever read in my life. Deviation.
Well, it's a difficult one. I mean, he thinks that everybody thinks it's interesting. I mean, if you all write something, you like to think that. It's a very difficult one for me to make a decision
on. All right, let him have it.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
No, I want more than that.
All right. So, Clement, we give you an incorrect challenge and 15 seconds, my ego starting now.
Egomania is a word which flourishes in our family.
David, challenge.
There's a little hesitation.
Yes,
a
bit.
Look, I have a pause between words. doing this for some 60 years.
But I must say...
And for someone who's only been here for 10 minutes... Okay, 5 minutes.
But sometimes, Clement, your pauses between words get longer and longer, and we interpret that as hesitation.
I hesitated.
So you have a correct challenge, David. You have ego, and you have 10 seconds starting now.
My ego is something that troubles me very much because I'm afraid of going...
Clement, challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
From hesitation. He was speaking rather quickly. There was hardly a pause between...
He always speaks rather quickly. And it's very clever to speak quickly in just a minute and keep going and not hesitate, which is exactly what David was doing. So he has an incorrect challenge. Another point, David. At this rate, you're going to win, you know, with the help of another point. 6 seconds to go, starting now.
My fear is that my ego will lead me to try and take over the world. And the people who I would...
So David Mitchell was then speaking as the whistle went and gained that extra point, and he has moved forward. He's now in the lead, ahead of Paul Merton. Right. There you are. It's all paying off. I don't know how many in the audience you bribe, but they're really loving you. Clement, it's your turn to begin. The subject is in the stocks. Tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
In medieval times, the stocks was a place where people were tied or fastened for public humiliation or torture or painful events.
Sheila Challenge.
Repetition of awe.
Yes. 49 seconds for you, Sheila, on In the Stocks, starting now.
At some village fetes nowadays, they put people in the stocks and throw wet sponges at them, usually the unfortunate vicar. And I think it's vicious. I've seen some really nasty scenes on village greens in the stocks. Amongst my stocks in the garden, I have a few little violets and daisies in the socks. In the socks.
Paul, your challenge.
Deviation.
Deviation, not deviation. Socks. Yeah.
Yes. Several good goes at it, though.
26 seconds for you, Paul, on In the Stocks, starting now.
Being in the stocks, I remember, as being a rather humiliating experience. The year was 1685. I said something naughty.
David, challenge.
Is there a repetition of being?
Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was indeed. Well, very early, David, on. Yes. Yeah. You're getting the hang of this game now, aren't you? 19 seconds available. You take back the subject, David. In the stocks, starting now.
In the stocks is a place you don't want to find yourself being. And in fact, in the village fetes where people are put in the stocks like vicars nowadays and have sponges thrown at them, I think it's incredibly offensive that that is a reference to a very unpleasant form of medieval torture. And those medieval ghosts...
Oh, Paul Challenge, yes.
Sadly, repetition of medieval.
Yes.
It's a tiny little word you need in most sentences there.
But it represents quite a big period of history.
Yeah.
Paul, you've cleverly gone in with 2 seconds to go. In the stocks, starting now.
So I thought I'd give succor to the people who were disappointed that I won that last particular challenge.
Yeah, but that's all wrong, because those are the rules of the game, and you played it before. Anyway, you were challenged by Clement Freud.
Hesitation,
right. Clement, 1 second to go on In the Stocks, starting now.
Custard charge.
So Clement Freud was then speaker as the whistle went, moved forward. He's still in third place ahead of Sheila Hancock, but trailing Paul Merton and David Mitchell. David's 1 point ahead of Paul. And Paul, it's back with you to begin, and the subject now is bugs. Tell us something about bugs in this game, starting now.
In the spy stories of the 1960s, I'm thinking of James Bond and perhaps even the books of Len Deighton, who wrote a series of novels featuring a spy's adventures. I had to do the plural of spy, because I said spy.
David, you challenge first.
I thought there was a little gap after
there
spies.
There was a hesitation, yes. You're getting the hang of this game very well now. 50 seconds available for you to take over the subject of bugs, starting now.
There are a lot of bugs around at the moment, and not the sort of flying beetle or other insect that we mean when we talk about bugs in the jungle, but viruses that seem to thrive in cold conditions and make people feel ill and unpleasant in a way that doctors just say, well, that's some bug, there's nothing I can do about that, just go away and be miserable or play in the snow or something similar to that. But I feel that bugs in other countries are more of a problem because they can burrow into the skin and lay eggs and make your elbow explode with thousands of tiny spiders coming out, attacking you through the eyes and eating your...
Clement Challenge.
Repetition of lots. This was
lots,
right at the beginning.
Lots of things,
yes,
lots
I'm...
of things exploding.
I want him to go on for a bit because...
Eat up time.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
That's wicked. Let them do all the hard work and then come in towards
the
end.
Last minute.
13 seconds, Clement, with you on bugs, starting now.
I don't really know a lot about bugs, except they creep and crawl about kitchens, bathrooms, lavatories, almost anywhere in a house. Look down and you will see a bug. Don't talk to them.
So at the end of that round, Clement Freud's speaker of the whistle went. He's moved forward. He's now just two behind Paul Merton. He's about five behind David Mitchell, who's in the lead still. And Sheila Hancock's bringing up the fourth place. Very valiant day. And Sheila, it's all your turn to begin. So would you take this subject now? The language I would most like to speak. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Well, off the top of my head, the language that I would most like to speak is cat talk. I have inherited from my daughter a very odd pussy who makes strange noises. As I go up the stairs, he goes, "Arrah!" And as though he is saying things to me that I don't quite understand. And I think they might be important because he is obviously distressed sometimes and he makes a low noise at me. And when I come home, like after this show, I'll go and he'll be sitting on the step and he will be going, like that at me. I wish I could answer him back. I make the same sound as him, but he doesn't like that at all. He puts his head down and his tail up, and then he goes like that. Not...
Paul Challenge.
Oh, it's a repetition of he. There was quite a few.
There's a lot of he's. Yes, there were. But it was lovely stuff. Fantastic. We enjoyed it. We were really in your life there,
Not
Sheila.
Really about language, but never mind.
Paul, you've got him with a correct challenge on... The language I would most like to speak, 12 seconds available, starting now.
I suppose I would like to speak French, but at school it wasn't an option. Seriously, I had to do metalwork instead, which struck me as a rather peculiar choice. I cannot speak to people in France, but I can make a very bad trowel.
So, Paul Merton, speaking as a whistle wing, gained an extra point. He's now 1 point behind our leader, David Mitchell. And they're both a few points ahead of Clement Freud and Sheila Hancock in that order. David Mitchell, it's your turn to begin. Oh, a lovely one. You've had some of these in this show. But this one, the subject is a purple patch. Talk about a purple patch in this game, starting now.
A purple patch is what I get on my shirt whenever I drink red wine or Ribena. And it embarrasses me and makes me feel that I'm not a proper human and shouldn't go to meetings and won't be taken seriously. And people say, Betty's no good at home cooking. And in general, isn't a professional man about town like I wish I came across. A purple patch also refers to a period of creativity that's particularly intense and impressive. You're a writer, you're... Purple patch would be when you wrote thousands and thousands of words in a day.
Oh, Clement Challenge.
Thousands and thousands and yes, thousands of words. Most of them the word thousand.
And you went for 30 seconds at a tremendous pace. Well done, David. But Clement spotted the thousands. He pressed first. 30 seconds to go, Clement, on a purple patch starting now.
If you have a lot of bugs in your kitchen or bathroom or laboratory or anywhere else, and you get a carpet beater and smash them, you are likely to end up with a purple patch, which actually comes out of the carpets.
Well, it was a hesitation after the most beautifully pronounced carpets I've ever heard in my life. But it was a hesitation after that.
It was a hesitation as he went into the S, right. Oh, the expression on his face was worth it. 12 seconds with you, Paul, on a purple patch, starting now.
Charlie Chaplin's film career from 1916 to 1917 is...
David Challenge.
Repetition of 19.
1916. Well, listen, David, you have 8 seconds. You've got back a purple patch, and you have 8 seconds starting now.
Charlie Chaplin's film career from 1916 to the mid-20s was perhaps the most creative period that he enjoyed.
So I've just been told we are moving into the final round. This will be it coming up. But before I do, I'm sure you'd like to know the situation. Sheila Hancock, who hasn't played the game for a long time, but does give great value.
She goes for ages,
my darling, and then somebody interrupts you. We have all that cat language, which was brilliant. And, and in second place is Clement Freud. He's a few points behind David Mitchell, who's only 1 point behind Paul Merton, who's in the lead as we go into the final round. Paul, it's your turn to start. And the subject now is my favourite joke. You have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
A man goes into a restaurant and he orders a bowl of soup and the waiter comes over and he's got the bind... Oh, no, I can't... You've got to repeat it.
I know you have. David, you challenge first. hesitation, we call it. 53 seconds. My favourite joke starting now.
My favourite joke is Boris Johnson. And I think that what's particularly hilarious about him is how he has managed to garner quite a lot of power, and soon we will see his malevolent intent. Although, actually, the more serious and powerful he becomes, the less funny I find him. And so, increasingly, what becomes my favourite joke is...
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of becomes.
Oh, yes. Yep. Becomes before, right. Yes, Paul, well, listen, you've got back in on my favourite joke. 31 seconds starting now.
Another favourite joke of...
Clement Foyd Challenge.
No, the subject was my favourite joke. Not another favourite joke.
Oh, I think you're being a bit pedantic. My favourite joke can be taken in many different ways.
But not as one of my favourite jokes. The subject was my favourite joke.
Well, I think you're right.
All right, Clement, you win the argument. Benefit of the doubt. 30 seconds. My favourite joke starting now.
My favourite joke is of an Englishman, Scot, Irish.
Don't he do anything?
Yeah. I don't know why you did it, because Scotsman and Irishman are one word, anyway. You
could amused me. Oh.
But I know. Strangely enough, Clement, our principal purpose is to amuse the audience.
Don't tell them that. Don't tell them that.
Oh, no, right. So, Paul, you challenged first.
Well, it was right. Hesitation,
yes, right.
Wasn't it?
And you've got my favourite joke, 23 seconds, starting now.
Two flies are playing football in a saucer. One says to the other, practice. He says, why? He says, next week we're in the cup. Now, I heard that when I was 7 years old, and then it was my favourite joke. I thought that was hilarious for a while. I certainly did. I would tell the other kids in school, have you heard the one about... And then I would relate the story, and they thought it was absolutely hilarious.
So Paul Merton brought the show to end with a flourish there. Let me give you the final situation. Sheila Hancock, who gives tremendous value. She's so modest. You did trail the others a little in this game.
I am trailing.
We loved your contribution, darling, and that's why you're here. Then came Clement Freud with quite a lot of points there, and we always enjoy his contribution. And then David Mitchell, who's only played the game once before, looked as if he could be the winner at one time, but he did fantastically, finishing in second place, but he was 3 points behind Paul Merton, who is this week our winner. So, it only remains for me to say thank you to these four fine, funny players of the game, Paul Merton, Clement Freud, David Mitchell, and Sheila Hancock. I thank Sarah Sharp, who's helped me with a score, blown her whistle greatly. We thank our producer, Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're indebted to this lovely audience here, who've cheered us on our way, magnificent. And we leave with happy memories. I hope you will do the same. From our audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and our panel, goodbye. But tune in the next time we play Just a Minute!